Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Right Now Weekly Radio Show, hosted by Vicki Winterton, founder of Expert Insights Publishing, home of best-selling books, award-winning magazines, global broadcasts, and communities. Right Now is a highly educational, inspiring, and empowering show focused on writing, publishing, and marketing your books, featuring outstanding guests from across the globe, including best-selling authors, world stage speakers, thought leaders, and visionaries with proven strategies, secret formulas, and treasured resources to help you succeed and make an impact. Welcome, sit back, and enjoy the show. And now your host, Vicki Winterton.
Hi, this is Vicki Winterton, and I am thrilled because today we have with us Leonard Perlmutter. Leonard, considered one of the West's foremost guides to understanding the nature of consciousness, now offers a heralded book that is an encyclopedic guide to meditation and to the yoga science that lies behind it. Praised by international medical luminaries such as Dean Ornish, Mehmet Oz, Bernie Siegel, and Larry Dossey. The Heart and Science of Yoga, the American Meditation Institute Empowering Self-Care Program for Happy, Healthy, Joyful Life shows us the way to meld meditation and yoga into your busy life experience and bring it to a new level of peace, contentment, and well-being. Leonard, welcome.
Thank you very much, Vicki. I appreciate the invitation.
Leonard, tell us a little bit about how you came to your passion and purpose in life, because you are at the forefront of meditation and yoga, and it's so exciting, the contribution you're making to the world.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you. You know, even as a child, I was very philosophically oriented. It was just the way that I saw the world. And as a young adult, I started studying and exploring the different spiritual and religious traditions. And that led me to the perennial philosophy and psychology of yoga science. And when I was a young boy, I was in the Cub Scouts and I was in the Boy Scouts. And I loved both of them. I enjoyed the program and the way that we were taught when we were scouts. You were presented a practice. You were asked to become proficient in it. And then you were asked to apply it in a real-life situation. It was always very practical, and of course the motto of the scouts was, be prepared. Well, be prepared for what? Well, you never knew, because life is a thrill a minute. And when I started studying yoga science, I found a similarity. Yoga science also offers different practices and basically holds out a carrot for each human being, and that carrot is that if you want to experience happiness and health and security, loving, creative, nurturing relationships, experiment with your own mind, body, sense complex, building what yoga science refers to as a bridge of yoga. This is a metaphoric bridge that connects our outer actions with our inner wisdom. And the hypothesis is that the more that we base our thoughts, words, and actions on our own inner wisdom, the more generously we experience happiness, health, and security. And the corollary is also true. If we do not base our outer thoughts, words, and actions on our own inner wisdom, then that inner conflict becomes the mother of all problems, and we experience dis-ease and pain instead of happiness, health, and security. So as soon as I started exploring this science and this philosophy and practicing it, gee, I felt better. I felt better on many different levels, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, and that encouraged me to continue. And here I am today.
Oh, you certainly are. And again, your gift to the world is just incredible. For those that are starting out, I was wondering if you could give some tips on how to get started with meditation and with yoga. It seems that you combine the two in such a beautiful way. In your teachings with others, how have you helped them overcome some challenges?
Well, it's always important to find a good teacher, somebody that you trust, that represents a lineage of women and men who have worked with these principles and these practices for many years. The lineage and the tradition from which the American Meditation Institute follows and is part of, that I founded in 1996, that lineage from which we teach is the oldest continuous spiritual tradition in the world. It's the oldest mind-body medicine in the world. It's the oldest meditation practice in the world. And there have been countless women and men who have worked with this knowledge and have had wonderful results. So it's very important that you find a teacher who represents a lineage. So it's time-tested. It's not just something new out of the box, the latest and the greatest cultural fad, but rather has been time-tested. And when you find that teacher will begin to have a relationship with you and will begin to see what your assets are and your challenges are. And a teacher will never ask you to do anything beyond your comfortable capacity. So what we learned first is that this is not an instant gratification, although there are many wonderful things that happen immediately, but rather it's a journey. It's a lifetime journey. And if the truth be known, we've all been collecting lots of habits and concepts our whole lives that are just not working for us. They've never really been working for us. But as we begin to explore the late morning and the afternoon and the late afternoon of life, it's important that we begin to examine these concepts. Personally, I know that when I was a young person, just like in arithmetic class in grade school, I learned from teachers that 1 + 2 = 3, and that was correct, and that's always served me very well. But I've also had other teachers, and those teachers taught me that 1 + 2 = 4. And because I was so vulnerable and so impressionable at a younger age, I accepted that 1 + 2 = 4. And don't you know, I stored that in my unconscious mind. And in certain circumstances, certain kinds of relationships, it's my go-to formula. When my emotional buttons are pushed, it could be with family, it could be with work colleagues, but when I'm under pressure in certain kinds of situations, I go to that equation, 1 + 2 = 4. And every time I do, I hurt myself. And so what yoga science and meditation helps us to do is to re-engineer the software of the mind. It helps us to transform the debilitating and contracting power of fear and anger and selfish desires into expansive qualities of a positive healing energy, an increase in willpower, and an expansion of our creative abilities. It's a very good deal.
It is indeed. I've been a practitioner of yoga and meditation for some years, and one of the things that I've marveled at with my own personal experience is that the progress isn't always evident, as it is in other things as you're going through your business life or whatever, and you see wins and you see improvement in various different things. But with this, to me, it was more subtle, and all of a sudden, I would be through major challenges, either physically with the yoga or through meditation, and arrived at a new place without even being thoroughly aware that change was taking place. I don't know if that's unique to me, but I found that to be a wonderful aspect of the practice.
I agree 100%. It's very subtle, and yet when you're aware of the change, it's very profound and very inspiring. My experience similarly is that I'll be in a relationship that previously was problematic, contentious, possibly with a sibling or a parent or a child. And unknowingly, because of my meditation practice and all its allied disciplines, in a particular situation, I will act very skillfully, very lovingly, very compassionately, very understandingly, as if I never had an issue, a contention with this individual. And then I'll catch myself, and I'll look in the rearview mirror at the old personality, and I'll recognize at that instant that something has changed, and it feels better physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And that just inspires me to keep on experimenting in more relationships with other habits that have come from the unconscious into the conscious mind, now ready to be transformed.
Yeah, that is so beautiful. So tell me a little bit about how you started writing, because you have this beautiful book, and I just wondered how the whole concept of reaching people through writing occurred to you.
Well, I was always attracted to short essay form of writing. When I was in grade school and high school, I just marveled at Patrick Henry's Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death essay. And in 1996, my teacher, my master, Swami Rama of the Himalayas, was dying in India, and he wrote me a note. And, of course, this was before email and before FedEx or UPS next-day delivery, things like that. And so it took maybe a couple of weeks to reach me. And the note said just three words. It was, start teaching now. Essentially, I've always had a rather shy personality. I never would have assumed that I would be a teacher in this lineage, in this tradition. On the other hand, through that note, my teacher was telling me two things. Number one, that I actually was prepared. And number two, that he is instructing me to teach. So I knew I had an obligation to serve that request from my teacher because I respected him. Then the question became, what am I going to teach? And so I was questioning. I was filled with doubts. The only thing that I felt confident in teaching was what I practiced. And that's when I began to write. I had just bought my first computer, and I sat down at the desk, and it took about 2 weeks. For hours on end, I would just pour out onto the computer, keystroking, what I did every day as practice, both the physical postures of yoga, as well as the meditation and the breathing practices, the understanding and optimization of the different functions of the mind, Ayurvedic medical principles, which has been very important to me. It taught me about my body and the constitution of my body and what food is best for me and what is the best time for me to eat and what is the best food to eat in certain seasons. And that became a framework for handouts that I would give to students. From that handout and then from those classes, I began to fill in some blanks in the outline, and I began to put together some teaching stories that would help illustrate the point that I was trying to make. And at a certain point, I recognized that if I have any talent at all, and this is coming from students, it's that I have an ability to help people connect dots. It's not that people are not intelligent, and it's not that they don't have experience. They have a lot of intelligence, and they have a lot of experience. But for some reason, I'm able to connect dots for people so that they can see a holistic philosophy that they've already learned. I teach them how to bring it into practice in their own lives. And so that's what started my writing. The book, The Heart and Science of Yoga, developed from that. I now author a quarterly journal of meditation as mind-body medicine, where I speak to different issues. They might be issues that are important in the culture or different issues that are important in my practice, and I offer that to folks either through the mail or digitally through our website, the American Meditation Institute.
Oh, that's wonderful. What a tremendous gift your writing is to the world, and tremendous gifts that you have available to everyone, not only through your book, but through your website throughout the world. It's just a wonderful time in which we live in order to share really rich and great teachings. So thank you so much for your generosity with that.
Well, thank you for noting that. I appreciate that very deeply.
I was wondering, what are some of your favorite tips? Because your writing has so much authenticity in it, you know, for writers to be able to really get down to that authenticity when they write, because I think that that's one of the things that is the biggest element in delivering a really well-written book.
Well, when I write, I'm always writing to somebody in a conversation. In my own mind, I'm speaking to somebody. I'm playing the role of somebody who has experienced something. I've experimented with something. I have experienced a truth. And I want to share with them what I have learned and how it has benefited me. So I think looking for authenticity, it's critically important, at least in nonfiction, to speak from your own personal experience. Otherwise, it's not real practical because it's just hearsay. I mean, I could study and then I could summarize what I have learned by reading other people's works. And that's okay, and that can be of some value, but it's not as powerful as if I brought that knowledge into my own life, and in the midst of a relationship, I made it the basis of my action, making sure that the action that I took was in harmony with my own inner wisdom. What we find out is that in those kinds of situations where we test the veracity of this knowledge that we have learned that comes to us as hearsay, whether it's in books or in lectures or videos, the internet, it could be very profound, but we don't know yet. We might believe because we think that this person who wrote this or who says this, the culture puts a good housekeeping seal of approval on them, but nobody really knows for sure. Until you bring it into the laboratory of your own mind-body-sense complex and test it. And when you test it, it means that you're going to have to examine the concepts of your mind, these concepts that are so powerful, these unconscious forces that are a million times more powerful than good intentions. So we have to examine these concepts because these concepts are what skew our perceptions. We don't really see the world. We see what we already know, based on these concepts that are stored. So if I'm looking at the world from the perspective of the concept that 1 + 2 = 4, then I'm going to have some problems and challenges in my life, as opposed to applying a concept like 1 + 2 = 3. And relationships, every relationship is so important. Every relationship from a yoga perspective is actually the consequence of a previous action, providing us a new opportunity to self-examine these unconscious forces that have now made their way into the conscious mind. If I serve these when they conflict with my inner wisdom, I'm going to experience pain. If I repress these unconscious forces, which are now conscious, like fear or anger or selfish desires, if I repress it, why, I'm going to become neurotic and I'll be in even more pain. So if I don't want to serve these forces and I don't want to repress these forces because of the pain that will come to me, the only option that we really have is to sacrifice it. And that's the key, sacrificing these forces that conflict with our inner wisdom. Sacrificing it is the key to transformation. Because when we examine our fear, when we examine our anger, when we examine our selfish desire, we note that, gee, these are just packages of energy. We know that they have a certain quality to them. We know that they're contractive. We know that they're debilitating. We know that they bring me pain when I serve them in mind, action, and speech. That much we know. And what do we know about energy, though? We know more about energy. We know that energy cannot be created and it cannot be destroyed. But we also know from grade school science that, gee, energy can be transformed. I have experimented with it. I have seen an ice cube melt into water. And I have seen water heated into gas. So it's the same with fear. It's the same with anger. It's the same with selfish desire. All these forces that can be debilitating because they reflect some conflict with our inner wisdom, they can also be transformed. And sacrifice is the mechanism. We sacrifice them so that our outer action reflects our inner wisdom. And in the process, they are transformed into strategic reserves of a positive healing energy, an increase in willpower, and an expansion of our creative capacity. So fear and anger and greed are not bad. They are our creative energy in an improper form. So Vicki, if I gave you 20 gallons of crude oil from Saudi Arabia and I put it into your automobile, you'd be very upset. It would wreck your engine because crude oil does not work in a combustion engine. I wouldn't do that. What I would do is I would take that crude oil and I'd first send it to a refinery in Texas where they have the technology to transform it, to refine it into gasoline. Then I would put it into your automobile and you'd be very pleased because you could drive around for 300 or 400 miles. It's the same with fear. It's the same with anger. It's the same with selfish desire. Once these forces that are now unconscious through a relationship make their way into the conscious mind, now I can do something with them. Now I can transform their inherent strength. To do that, I need to base my outer action on my inner wisdom. And that's the essence of yoga science, always leading us to fulfillment of the purpose of our lives without pain, without misery, and without bondage.
So beautiful, really beautiful. Well, the book, the title, The Heart and Science of Yoga, you know, many would look at those as being polar opposites. How did you address this in the book, if you could share that with our listeners?
Well, the heart is the essence, and the science is the practical template for proving it. It's all about experimenting with the truth in every kind of situation. So yoga science, as I mentioned before, is the oldest form of mind-body medicine. And as such, it asks us to experiment in order to experience the happiness, health, and security that we deeply desire. And yoga not only asks us to experiment, it provides us a philosophical and a scientific template for seeking and discovering the truth. But to begin the practice, an individual must first be willing to use his or her own mind-body-sense complex as a personal laboratory to undertake scientific experiments. So in the midst of every relationship, we employ this metaphoric bridge of yoga that asks us to base our outer action on our inner wisdom in order to discover and in order to verify the truth. So in every relationship, every thought, every word, every act is to be in service to the truth. And how do we access the truth? We access the truth through our conscience. It's really a remarkable situation that we've been gifted. Human beings are the only animal that have a conscience. No other animal has a conscience. And what is the conscience? The conscience has one purpose, and that is to discriminate, determine, judge, and decide. And its functionality is very similar to a mirror. Our conscience has a reflective quality to it. When we give attention to our conscience, the conscience, this mirror that is part of our mind, can reflect wisdom from the superconscious portion of the mind. Now, the superconscious portion of the mind is not a metaphor. It's not just poetry. It's a real portion of the mind. It lies beyond the conscious portion of the mind that we're familiar with. It lies beyond the unconscious mind that we're sort of familiar with. The superconscious portion of the mind is the same portion of the mind where Albert Einstein saw mathematical equations, where Paul McCartney hears beautiful melodies. Doesn't mean that I'm going to become a songwriter. It doesn't mean, Vicki, that you're going to become a physicist or a mathematician. What it does mean is when we are in a relationship, and every relationship means the same thing, it means that we have to take an action. And we already know from Newton's third law of motion that every action is going to bring about a consequence. So what is the consequence that I want to come from this relationship? Well, I want to be happy. I want to be healthy, and I want to be secure. So we already know what the answer of the equation is. We know that we want to be happy and healthy and secure. And if I can use my conscience to reflect wisdom from this intuitive library within the superconscious portion of the mind, then our conscience will then reflect that wisdom into our conscious mind. And I am consciously aware of wisdom. Then the question is, am I going to serve it in mind, action, and speech? If I can, I'll be led for my highest and greatest good. If I don't, I'll experience some form of physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual dis-ease or pain. And if I don't heed the lesson of pain at a low decibel level, the decibel level just gets louder and louder and louder till the dis-ease becomes a disease. And that's the way it is. That's yoga science. Albert Einstein says that a problem cannot be solved on the level at which it arises. It must be solved on a higher level. I just described the higher level, that we need to have a philosophy of life that encourages us to base our outer thoughts, words, and deeds on our own inner wisdom. We need to use our conscience to reflect this superconscious wisdom into our conscious mind, and then in mind, action, and speech, we need to employ that wisdom. Stand back, and then as a doubting Thomas, ask yourself, how do I feel physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually? I have felt better in every experiment, and I continue to do that. And I've taught others, and I've written about it because it made me feel better.
What are the main focuses that you hope readers will take away from reading your book?
The main focus I would have is not to believe what I'm saying, but to be interested enough and empowered enough to try to experiment themselves with the truth in their own lives. Every thought is only a suggestion, and yet every thought can bring us potentially to the health and the happiness and the loving, creative, nurturing, secure relationships that we deeply desire. So we need to examine our thoughts. If the truth be known, we listen in our own mind to a lot of junk thoughts. We've heard of the concept of junk food, and slowly, slowly, people are moving away from junk food. But what about junk thoughts? We just seem to ingest them mindlessly. Well, one of the students of the Compassionate Buddha once asked him, "Are you God?" He says, "No." He says, "Are you an angel?" "No." "Well, then who are you?" he was asked. And he said, "I'm just awake." And that's what this whole process is about a reawakening to our inner wisdom. The culture doesn't really encourage us to trust ourselves. There have been certain influences in history who have asked us to trust our own self. William Shakespeare says, above all else to thine own self be true. And that's what yoga science is asking of us. Through meditation and gentle yoga, working with the body, we're asked to begin this process of going within, seeking within, find the truth within, and then employing in mind, act, and speech, stand back and just see how we feel. That provides a great, great faith in ourselves, great confidence in ourselves, great confidence in the teaching, and it helps us to embrace relationships that previously we might not have ever even considered. The game changer.
Yeah, and again, so very powerful. So I know this is probably early to ask you this question, but if you were to look at the body of work that you're doing, the amazing contribution, once again, you're making, and through your work as well as through your book, what would that look like for you as a legacy to the world?
Well, that's up to other people to comment on. It's really not for me. I consider myself a modern-day Johnny Appleseed. My job is to show up in relationships, either with family members, work colleagues, students, other teachers, and try to present this teaching as accurately as I can. My job is to plant the seeds. When they sprout, how they sprout, under what condition, that's not up for me to decide. So I'm not interested in a legacy for myself. I'm just interested in serving every moment as best I can, in every relationship as best I can, to share the truth that has been true for me in my life through this experiment in yoga science. I know, and I know that I know, that at a certain point, these seeds will sprout, but it's just not up to me to say when they should sprout and what form it should look like. It's beyond my imagination. But I'm content in just planting the seeds.
Oh, that is so beautiful. Truly beautiful. Well, I know that your wonderful book can be found on Amazon, The Heart and Science of Yoga. Can you give your website one more time so that people can connect with you online as well?
Yeah, it's americanmeditation.org. It's a nonprofit, americanmeditation.org. And there you'll be able to find the book, different essays that I've written. You'll be able to find access to online classes. If you're not in our regional area in upstate New York, we have folks from all over the world who come to weekly classes through the magic and technology of the internet. We also have an online video curriculum, 5.5 hours that have been documented that actually present a video version of the book. We've been also very gifted in having received certification from the American Medical Association and the American Nurses Association to teach physicians and nurses this core curriculum for continuing medical education credits. And every year we have a conference for them in the Berkshire Mountains in western Massachusetts. That information is online. We also have a summer retreat here at the American Meditation Institute in upstate New York, July 13 through 16, I believe it is this year, where people over a four-day period will receive the entire core curriculum contained in the Heart and Science of Yoga. But it can all be found at americanmeditation.org.
Oh, fabulous. Leonard, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your knowledge and being so generous once again with all of the information that you make available out there. And congratulations on a wonderful book.
Well, thank you very much, Vicki, and thank you very much for making this space available to me in such a comfortable environment and such a welcoming space. It's been a delight.
Oh, thank you so much. And for all of you out there who would like to learn more about Expert Insights Publishing, our best-selling books, award-winning magazines, our global communities and broadcast, you can find us at getei.com. That's GETEI.com. And everyone have a wonderful week.